Welcome to The Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And this week on The Weekly, Pathfinder Nexus, the digital toolset,
okay.
Official version. Warhammer Fantasy bundle on Humble Bundle, and it's a good one. Cyborg by Free League, or published by Free League, and Bugs Bunny in D&D.
Okay.
Yes. So let's start off with some good news from Paizo instead of their things that have been going on. Well, we did hear, just to jump back to last week, Paizo did accept, like officially, the company officially accepted the unionization.
Yep, I noticed saw that as well, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a big step. So we'll have to look and see if other companies are going to kind of fall in line, if it works well and it's going to help the payment and help the workers' power in tabletop, or if it's just going to reduce staff. They're just going to, reduce staff, and small companies are just going to disappear and try to sell themselves off. Yeah. And I wonder what that means for, Wizards of the Coast and things. I mean, they can resist organizing pretty hard. So I don't know. We'll see.
I think maybe for certain things, because I imagine, much like Paizo, in-house, staff members for D&D, you're looking at a small number.
Yes.
You have to be, right?
Yeah.
Just from how things go. And freelancers probably make up, the bulk of it. So, who knows? If something happens, similar to what happened with Paizo, where, the freelancers all just kind of go, no, we're not going to work, then they might have leverage.
Yeah,
but then thinking about, magic, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, magic is Wizards of the Coast and Hasbro's kind of cash cow.
Yeah.
So I wonder how connected those two groups are.
I
imagine you would have to get a union in both of them, or going over both of them for it to have much leverage over Watson.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, it would have to be all the big money makers for them. Yeah, so we'll keep an eye out and see it's probably going to start with all the smaller, which is actually a bigger burden for those smaller companies to stay competitive and have labor negotiations. But I think it's a better look too for those indie companies, because they're kind of putting their money and their salaries where their mouth is. But Paizo has just announced that they're working with Demiplane to produce an officially licensed digital toolset for Pathfinder. This is for second edition. Mm-hmm. It's a little late. I mean, pre-pandemic would have been a sweet time to have this out. Yeah, 2019 would have been a great time to. So they might be reacting to the big spike in what they've seen on Roll20 and things with their games. But this is not until early 2022, so we've got a few months still.
Early 2022, that's only like 5 months, yeah.
Yes, and depends on, digital, release dates and stuff. Early can mean who knows. But so Pathfinder Nexus is the official title. It will include a character builder, a game compendium, digital videos, interactive character sheets, a play space with video chat, and tools that are fully integrated. So the lead designer for this is Adam Bradford, who also worked on D&D Beyond.
Right, okay.
So, yeah, there's experience here, so they're not going to fumble this. This isn't going to be like a developer that's never done this before and have to figure it all out from scratch. And there's a little quote from Adam saying, "Pathfinder Nexus will give players the kind of support and dynamic, expansive game that Pathfinder deserves." I'm thrilled for the fans to see how much convenience Pathfinder Nexus brings to the tabletop, so the most important elements can shine through. So players and stories, the stories that you're telling together. So
Before hearing who was involved, and this is kind of speculation, I was wondering if this announcement was kind of in response to WotC's digital tools thing. Like, I forget what it's called, but wasn't there recently some kind of leaked or teased announcement that D&D is going to start doing its own kind of digital platform with the idea probably being, D&D is big enough to the point where if they do their own thing, they'd probably encourage a lot of people to move over to it, right? So my thought was Pathfinder is kind of following suit.
Yes.
And but only because Adam Bradford, I think, was working for a while on the digital tools for the Cortex Prime version of kind of D&D Beyond, like the same kind of digital tools thing. That was early last year, and then I think maybe around the middle of the year, there wasn't... I mean, it was nice, but he just kind of said, okay, I'm leaving the project. I had an opportunity to go do something else, and I wonder if this was it.
Ah, maybe. Yeah,
maybe. Right. And knowing that and knowing who's involved, this has probably then been in the works for a while. So, I mean, everything's probably been in the works for a while. But now I'm less likely to believe this is Pathfinder going, oh, we got to copy D&D, because this is probably already in the works for a while.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true.
Now they've announced it, right? So, sure, like you said, it probably would have been great for them to have digital tools pre-pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the pandemic, and I'm not saying this is a positive, right? Maybe because of the pandemic, they looked at the numbers and say, hey, we have enough of a user base to make this a worthwhile venture.
Yeah. We're a distant second, but it's worth, worth going after. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know how I feel about these. This is kind of like when these TV studios start their own streaming platform to put one popular show there. So, the American Office is now going to be on Peacock. It's like, I'm not going to subscribe to that, but I guess, if you are Pathfinder players and you've been using like Roll20 official modules or whatever, and if you're going to have everything all in one place and everyone's loyal to Pathfinder, that's the thing that they like to do, it would be good to support the official digital tool set, but not if you're buying everything again, It's the frustrating part of it is like, I already own, so they're going to have trouble dragging people away if they've invested hundreds of dollars already in the digital, modules and supplements and everything. So that they can use that on Roll20, and now they're going to have to go over to something else. So it's a difficult thing to kind of figure out what's worth it. So I don't know. A virtual tabletop. The other thing that I'm kind of hesitant about, and I think Pathfinder could fall into it, is once you do have a real swanky interface, you've got all these little cool tokens for your characters and stuff. It's basically like playing a PC game that you're talking over, that you're just, the software is handling some of the mechanics and you're kind of talking through your characters, but the combat feels like a turn-based PC RPG.
It is. Sorry.
So. So, it just reminds you, it can take the combat and turn it into, that they were doing this, At least like miniatures on a table and stuff and a DM drawing a map and stuff is a little more fun and tactile. And when you're just like, oh, that looks nice. Oh, look, the fire is flickering and okay. And it's like... What are we doing? Why don't we just like stream? Like, because there are PC RPGs that have very interesting dynamic lighting that you can play online together. So your characters are there and you can just talk the whole time. You could say what your character was going
to
say.
Hate to break it to you. People who play D&D 5e and Pathfinder like that turn-based.
Yeah.
So like, I get what you're absolutely not disagreeing. Right. Totally get what you're saying about. It does feel a little bit like companies coming up with a streaming service just to promote this thing. But I guess, they're probably, just like the D&D digital tools, they're probably looking to attract the hardcore Pathfinder players who just like, I only play Pathfinder. That's about like the only thing that I play. So moving over to this other platform totally makes sense.
Yeah.
And I guess they feel there are enough of those people to make this venture worthwhile. I don't think... And the same with the D&D digital tools. Actually, no, maybe a little bit different for D&D. But I think you're probably not going to get the people who play everything to switch over to these Pathfinder Nexus tools. Whatever, right? Because they just play everything and it makes more sense to have a general thing.
Yeah.
I think that might be my voice. I think it might be a little bit different with D&D just because D&D is an 800-pound gorilla, you might get more people saying, well, I play other games, but I play D&D often enough, and everything is going to be in D&D. You're probably going to get more people swapping over to that than you would for Pathfinder. But I don't think it's going to necessarily be... It's not going to be a bad thing, right? I wonder, as you said, if people have already bought material, and I don't know how Nexus would do this, if they could somehow... look at people's purchase and be like, oh, you purchased this whatever Pathfinder module through Roll20 or whatever virtual tabletop you're using, so you get it over here. Because having to buy things again is a turnoff. Like, right. I'm sure there's going to be some hardcore fans who'll do it because they love the game that much. And I saw someone talking about with the release of the announcement of the D&D digital tool saying they've bought the same product like 3 times. Right?
Yeah, right, right.
And they were actually kind of saying, I'm happy to do this. And I'm like, really? Why would you want to do that, right? Mm-hmm. But they were saying having to buy it again would kind of be like a breaking point for them, right? So, yeah, there's only so many times you can get people to pay for the same thing before they go,
Not. And there has to be a real high level of polish on the assets and everything that you're going to be buying, because I played Call of Cthulhu and downloaded one of the starter set adventures on Astral.
Okay.
And the official module, it was cheap, it's just a couple of dollars, but it was terrible.
Oh, wow.
the character sheets for the pre-gens were great. Mm-hmm. That was it. Everything else, sucked. No, it was just like really low. I don't know where they got these graphics and stuff. It was really low rent. I'm like, wow, this is an official product that Chaosium said, okay, here's our stamp of approval, put on their website for sale. I'm like, it's garbage. I mean, I just deleted most of the assets and replaced them myself with stuff that from the starter set, because I didn't even use very many official art assets and stuff. It was odd. It was a really odd thing. So it has to be good quality, because it's going to represent, you know, the company. It's their official tool set. So I hope it works well for them, and I hope they figure out a way not to gouge players and to give them something, some like, you know, value added things that are like, I'm so glad we switched over to this. You know, this feels more like Pathfinder. We have access to more things.
Well, I wonder if the one time I played Pathfinder was like a 5, and this was 1E, like a 5 or 6 session kind of thing. And it did feel a bit kind of like playing a PC game on a computer. But I think part of the appeal of moving to that virtual tabletop is giving the computer or the software the ability to calculate that stuff.
Yeah, it does all that, right?
My point is, why have that fucking math in there? Anyway, right? Like, let's just play a game that doesn't have all that fucking math in it, right? But, I mean, like, I understand, like, if you want to play Pathfinder and that's what you do, and you love that system, then a dedicated virtual tabletop that'll make those calculations for you, it's great. That's perfect for you, right?
Right. No, that's true. To take some of that away, just so, and so there's no referring to rules and stuff, because you've got all the bonuses and everything are built in.
Yeah, just built in
there. Yeah. Yeah, so that's... It's a good thing, and hopefully it's good for Paizo, and hopefully they get past their problems, their morale problems.
Stuff.
We'll say. Hopefully that goes well. So, we'll take another look at this, and you're able to pre-order now in early access feature, so you can pre-buy things before the actual release.
Is it a subscription service?
It doesn't say. It just says that starting today, they'll grant early access to content in the services digital reader. So maybe they want to show off a little bit. This is how you access stuff, and look at this. It's all hyperlinked, or, you know, they probably want to get people excited for, you know, the usability of it, but it doesn't say. It probably will be, if it follows the other model of virtual tabletops, you players can play it for free, you know, the assets and everything are unlocked, and then the GM has to have a premium subscription or something. So yeah, we'll see how they handle that and what they add to it that differentiates it. If there's even a need to do that, I don't know. Maybe players just haven't.
Is just enough. Yeah.
They may have some certain expectations, and that's all you need to meet. So we will see Pathfinder Nexus on the horizon for early 2022. So Humble Bundle, this could not be better timing for me I was just frustrated. So I found a good deal on Enemy Within the first, or Enemy in Shadows, the first book. But because I didn't buy it directly from Cubicle 7, I didn't get the PDF.
Oh.
But the PDF is included in this Humble Bundle. So the Humble Bundle, it's got a couple more weeks left, is a Warhammer Fantasy role play. And it's a huge amount of books. It's almost, it's like 2 dozen books, so like almost 50 books from the series, including things that haven't ever been in digital form before.
Cool.
I mean, legally, I'm sure they exist in scans. But for as little as $1, you can try out Cubicle 7's 4th edition Warhammer Fantasy with this Humble Bundle. So the $1 level will get you $1. Their starter set. And the starter set includes the pre-gen characters, along with 2 standalone adventures, If Looks Could Kill, and The Buildings of Reichland, which detail a bunch of locations in the old world. So you got six pre-gens and a quick start rule. So it's not the full rule set, but you know, just like with other starter sets, it steps you through. And I think with this system, if you've never played this and never played D100, you probably want to have one of those kind of gradual. You don't want to jump right into you know, combat and status effects and hit locations if you've never done this before, because there's a lot more crunch than you may be used to. So so for $1, that's the starter set, which the box set, it's a great box set. The production quality of it and what they did for graphically and everything, they're really nice looking physical files, so the cool digital files will be wonderful. If you jump that up to $10, you'll then unlock the core book for 4E, so that's the full rules, plus the GM screen and a bunch of assorted scenarios. And then by the time the next two tiers unlock the almost $48 or 48 books. So $18 gets you several more scenarios, and then the full $30 gets you everything. So that's almost 50. So it's about $573 in PDFs. Wow. If you would have bought that.
DRM free PDFs.
Yeah, too, right. Yeah, because Cubicle 7, their stuff is not cheap, but it's well-produced. Like, the production quality is really nice. So this collection includes the core rules of Warhammer Fantasy's older first and second editions. Edition, which has never been in PDF form, digital PDF form before. So this won't be a scan somebody's thrown together with just a bunch of JPEGs in a PDF. This is going to be, copy. Actual text files and maybe searchable, reader searchable, and have a lot more use and be much, more readable and printable. And then several GM packs and adventures and supplements. And so it looks like just about almost everything that was released for second edition.
Oh, cool.
So in the early 2000s, that's what second edition came out, and just everything that they produced. And that was it wasn't Black Library yet. I forget what the production, Black, Foundry or something.
I couldn't tell you, yeah.
But so that's a lot of the second edition, and the rules, of course, have been updated for fourth edition, and we're kind of skipping that third edition. If you don't know, it was kind of the board game edition. Oh, okay. So the Fantasy Flight, very heavy on tokens the narrative dice system. So we're kind of jumping over that. So I don't even know.
Maybe they don't own it though.
Yeah, they might not
own
it.
The rights to
reproduce all of that. Yeah, so they may actually have access to the rule set, but without all the board game elements, you can't even play that game. Yeah. But so if you're curious about that, and so the second edition books though are amazing source material. So stuff that they haven't even touched on in fourth edition yet. They're still reprinting stuff. So all the books of the different schools of magic and everything that. You would want is all in the second edition books. It's crazy the amount of stuff that's on offer.
Are you still running your Warlock game?
Yes.
I was going to say, what version of Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay were you kind of using port over?
I was doing first edition everything. And so I'm basically I'm using just everything from the source. So all the rules and stat lines and stuff don't mean anything because it's so simplified. So yeah, this is really nice to have, kind of updated source. And I think second edition covered things a bit more thoroughly and in a little bit more, the production is a little more luscious and the detail is nice, whereas that early first edition is just real janky black and white with these little tiny illustrations for a lot of the characters and things. This is going to be a lot of stuff. So, bestiaries, character compendiums, a ton of stuff. So if you're interested at all, or if you missed Warhammer Fantasy, or if you've got some cruddy PDFs you downloaded from somewhere and want a decent edition, this would be a good chance. And that top tier, that $30 tier, also gives you 20% off at the Cubicle 7 store.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it gives you a month.
So if you wanted physical copies too.
Right, yeah. So if there's anything that you wanted physical of the new, so that's a great way to get the new core book, because 20% off is going to take a big chunk out of that.
Or if you have an old OSR-ish kind of grimdark game that you want source material for,
So this really excited me. It was perfect timing for what I was doing, and we just had the second session of that. It's going really well. The players are amazing. All the little details that they have in the rules, especially the first edition, is like, and if the players try to steal the stagecoach, you're just like, they would never do that. Oh, my God, they're doing
that. They did. Yeah.
So it's been, yeah, it's been really fun. So I think the I'm starting to really be charmed by rules light systems because it gets so much out of the way. I did not have to look up a rule an entire session. And that if we were playing.
But you still engage with the rules, yeah, right?
Right.
This is not the, we didn't roll dice the entire session. Yeah. Well, then why the fuck are you playing the game?
No,
right?
Exactly. No, yeah. There was a lot of rules and a lot of like, you know, when it was a critical success, it, you know, changed things dramatically. And when it was a fumble, it, you know, so there are great mechanical effects that happened. And I didn't have to go back because fourth edition, would definitely be going back.
Hold on.
Yeah, wait. Okay, so that was a hit to your left arm? Okay, wait. I don't.
Oh, you
have
lost a couple fingers. Were you wearing a ring?
Yeah. So it helped a lot because a few of the playthroughs I was watching of this same adventure in fourth edition, yeah, they did say, well, you know what that's going to do? That's like, wow, if I was having to like adjust difficulties on so many different levels, your social status versus, you know, it's like, oh, okay, I'm not, yeah. So this was really perfect. And especially for the, you know, we're a newer group and haven't played together much before. This makes things so much easier and lets the players kind of feel out their characters and do more role play. But also there's enough strategy in it because you're still, you know, you're still in cover, you're still aiming shots and stuff. So there's still some strategic elements of combat.
Cool.
But yeah, so this is, yeah, perfect timing. So anybody that's interested in the dead world of old world Warhammer Fantasy,
yeah,
all the details, yeah. I know, all the details. I guess they're trying to bring it back, but they're going to bring it back in the stupidest way possible. It looks very garish and Age of Sigmar. Like they've showed, you know, production sketches and
have
things.
They?
Yeah.
Interesting.
And so it's going to be a very expensive
Forge.
No, but even more, it's gonna be Forge World expensive. So it's like, yeah, if you think $10 is expensive for a mini, how about 50?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's
I tangent, but with all like the 3D printers, 3D print like creators,
right,
that are doing Warhammer Fantasy and 40K themed stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this is just kind of the route GW has to go, where it's like, we know you can get this stuff cheaper elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we're going to have to become fucking Mercedes-Benz.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know cars, so if there's a more expensive brand, please tell me, right? We're going to have to become like, I don't know, the whatever of the miniatures world, and loyalty is just going to keep people buying it, and we can no longer appeal to...
I don't know.
Mid to low level gamers. We just can't.
Right. It may be the case. And I don't know. I don't know what the thinking of bringing fantasy back when they're already pushing Age of Sigmar so hard. And there's duplication. Like Age of Sigmar brings back all of these named characters and places and things, just places them in these bubble dimensions and they're planes, I guess. And so that's it's an odd thing. It's an odd move. And it's just because they're trying to pander to fans and the, you know, the things that people have been wanting, you know, asking about again and again.
Yeah, pander kind of has a negative term, but I mean, like, if there's enough demand.
Yeah, yeah. That's true. And
why not as a company?
Yeah, and if the timing is right, like everybody that like is mourning the death of their metal, you know, metal fantasy armies and now they've got a few more decades of income, and now we're going to release. Do you remember playing this game? Look at this luscious, amazing, you know, premium version. So basically, they're making the Horus Heresy the 30K of Warhammer Fantasy. You know, a premium like nostalgia base. Like, oh, this is recreating, you know, what we got from the novels and things. Seems like they're going to be doing that, which I don't know how well that's going to work, and it looks pretty bad. It looks they're really Age of Sigmaring it up. I don't know a better way. It's a little too fancy.
Extreme fancy, yeah.
Yeah, it's not Mud and Blood anymore. It's a little too, you
know. The Oshade Warhammer Fantasy.
So we'll see.
Kira Kira.
Yeah, but Cubicle 7 does it.
Sorry, I broke him. Oshade and Kira Kira Warhammer Fantasy.
Oh man! Well, at least the Japanese players might get on board, and the Koreans. But yeah, so Cubicle 7 does good stuff. And if you want black, what was it?
It was Black Library for a while.
Yeah, it was something else though. When the second edition had some weird name when they were publishing it before Fantasy Flight had the rights. But yeah, Cubicle 7 does good stuff, and the second edition stuff is really comprehensive. There's so many. I mean, they cover everything. Mm-hmm. So as far as background, if you want background from for the old world, that's a great place to look. Probably even better than some of the old, army books and stuff.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So, yeah, that's running for a few more weeks, and I'll put a link to that in the description. Cool. And supporting that also supports the channel, because we have an affiliate link for the Humble Bundle. So
go buy that Humble Bundle.
Help us out. All right. So, Chris, do you dream of strange dreams, feverish dreams about a nano-infested doomsday where cybernetic misfits and punks are raging against a relentless corporate hell?
If I say no, what happens? is this like a Turing test or whatever?
You don't get this announcement. Yeah, right. I should have taken a video of your pupil as I asked you that. Well, I got an interesting email from Free League that said, "The world ends once more." So the cyberpunk spinoff game, Cyborg, is coming. So this is the Mjork Borg. So that's dark fantasy. Right. And so this is... what, synth metal, industrial hip hop? I don't know what music would you pair with a cyberpunk version? So a dark, nasty, in the same very heavily designed and very fun, the crazy aesthetic. And already, so it was very odd to put all those hot pink and bright yellow and things and the metallic inks with fantasy, but it's going to fit perfectly cyberpunk. So
maybe this book is just going to be like beige.
Yeah, right.
And brown.
That would be great if it's all earth tones.
Yeah, it's all boring natural earth tones for the cyberpunk future. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, we'll have to see what Johan has in store. So the same designer, different writer, game designer is different, but the artist is going to be the same. The art direction will be the same. So they're going to have a Kickstarter on November 13th to release this and publish through that collaboration with Free League and right. Stockholm Cartel again. So very fun to see what they're going to do. So, in the same way that, they tried to make a really gritty, but playful. Like, it wasn't, supposed to be so dark that you were, gagging and it had a sense of humor to it, like the early fantasy right. Roleplay did, but kind of taken to an extreme and designed to an extreme. And I think because I just did a flip through an unboxing of Mjork Borg and a lot of supplement things that came with that. And that's the thing you really do feel is, we wanted something heavily designed because we're tired of looking at Word docs of rule sets. And it's like, what if this had a really crazy aesthetic that matched the setting that we wanted to do? And I think that they captured that really well. And I'm surprised. Warlock and Mjork Borg there's a lot of similarities in the choices they made mechanically and things.
If not visually.
Yeah, right. Yeah, so there's I think it's that rules light that works really well. So the same way that Warlock gets out of your way and lets you play, Warhammer Fantasy, I think this these systems will do the same for Cyberpunk and things, which, the Cyberpunk Red that they, yeah, it's a rules light version of that, and there do exist because we played the Sprawl and things. There are more rules light versions of Cyberpunk, but I think this particular kind of paring down might work really well.
I'm wondering what the mechanics are going to be like because I certainly haven't soured on Cyberpunk. I mean, no disrespect for people who have, since we live in capitalist dystopia hellscape, right? We're living, and so if you kind of get burnt out. I understand.
Yes.
But I also have kind of looked at cyberpunk, and we've had a number of discussions where it seems like cyberpunk as a genre has been commodified and corporified to where it's like, hey, just because you got black trench coats and katanas, that's not okay. That's become the mainstream kind of cyberpunk.
Yeah,
that's not really what cyberpunk arguably ought to be. Because I think there's a good argument that even kind of the earlier pioneers of cyberpunk, like Gibson and Neuromancer and stuff like that, you look at it and you're like, okay, it's kind of there, but even the main characters end up kind of being corporate sellouts.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So there's a solid argument to be made that cyberpunk is not kind of rebelling against the system. It's being an outcast kind of trying to get back into the system or working within it. But I kind of enjoy cyberpunk that is kind of, I guess, the more socially aware of, nope, we're trying to dismantle
the
synth system and we're playing Outcast. So I wonder what Cyborg will be. Will it be the kind of Mjork Borg aesthetic version of katanas and trench coats?
Mm-hmm.
Or will it be sort of the more recent socially aware, we're trying to dismantle this system? Based on that single tagline, the world ends again.
Yes, yes.
I'm thinking it's the former.
Yeah, I hope that, because if they keep that apocalyptic aesthetic where it's like doomsday is looming, and are you going to
you got like, what, like 3 days before,
Yeah, are you just going to scavenge for creds, or are you going to actually try to stop it? You're going to try to do something happening?
Can you stop it? Because it's getting back to Mjork Borg, like, okay, I think I've looked at a few pages of the book. It looks amazing. I haven't really looked at the system. I get the sense you can't stop the apocalypse in your book. And
In certain adventures, like the there is a big bad to face and a thing that's like unraveling. And I think so what was included in the core book is just a starting adventure, but it kind of introduced the idea of like the two-headed basilisk and like this thing looming over the world. You eventually want to, you know, work your way up to challenging it. And to do that, you have to, there'll be a few courses to kind of power up, beef up your characters. I don't know if there has been a, like an ultimate, you know, a climax or anything that they've, released yet, but there's been, There's been a lot for that.
So you might actually be able to avert the apocalypse in Mjork Borg.
I'm not sure. That's kind of like the moral choice that the rule book says. So you're just gonna you're just gonna dig for blood soaked gold, or you're actually gonna try to find out what's going on. Right. So it may not be a solvable problem, but you may see who's screwing things up.
Right. Well, interesting. Well, then I'm a bit more curious about Cyborg, because maybe they're kind of doing the same thing where it's like, shit's fucked.
Mm-hmm.
All right, there goes our PG. Are you going to just amass as many credits as you can, because who cares, the world is ending, or are you going to try and actually do something?
Yeah. So they say the game is about climate collapse, out of control consumerism, the commodification of personal data, late stage capitalism, transhumanism, and senseless violence. So 160 pages of cybernetic upheaval. So yeah, and the Christian Salin is a veteran OSR, Swedish OSR designer, and of course Johan Noor, the artist, and that's worked on a lot of the support, the original book, and then support for Mjork Borg, and so we'll see. And I think the important thing that cyberpunk has to have is those two levels, like cyberspace and real space, like meat space and cyberspace is important. So if they make an interesting, if there's something interesting to do in both of those, and there's some, you know, interaction between the two, I think it might feel, you know, nice and cyberpunk.
Well, I was going to say cyberpunk is, or the Matrix stuff is essentially magic.
Right.
Which is why I don't like Shadowrun, because how do you blend those two things when they're essentially the same thing, right? Especially mechanically. But I wonder if you would have to have... Okay, the element, I think, would have to be there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it would necessarily have to be interacted by the players to mean it's a cyberpunk world.
Oh, right? Interesting.
Like, yeah. I think you could probably totally run stuff where we don't have a hacker. Hackers exist and the Matrix exists on the stuff...
Right.
We don't have one. We're not going to explore this game.
Yeah, I wonder. Because, doing something rules light means that might be one of the things you kind of jettison, or how you interact with it is very
or
different.
Or it's all just fictionally based.
Yeah. But for me, the same way that like Call of Cthulhu is, health and sanity. Mm-hmm. Like, you have those two things that you have to keep track of. Yeah, definitely cyberpunk has to have... Like there's something that's going on, because that is the oppression, I think, of the corporate, of the corporations built cyberspace, and you are attacking it the same way that you're raiding a fortified building or whatever
to get into space. That
yes
air gapped server
So it'll be fun to see, and I'm really curious about the aesthetic of the book too.
Calling it now. Neutral brown earth tones to clash with the future.
That would be really funny. Yeah, I wonder if they want it to look, because they're saying that materials that have been produced for Mirkborsch should be, with some adjustment, right, compatible with this system as well.
Instead of magic, it's tech.
Yeah, right. So yeah, you're just gonna, it's a instead of a evil wizard, it's an evil technomancer, right, or whatever. Right. So they're kind of keeping that in mind. So that may simplify the setting, and maybe the aesthetic might match. Oh, yeah, they may want things to match so people get the, I don't know, but that'll be really fun to see just browns and olive drab.
Oh, I'm thinking like early Apple IIe computers. Just that horrible beige.
That would be, that'd be nice. And you have to, big SCSI ports for all of your access.
Ooh.
So it's going to use an updated version of the original Mirkborsch rules, keeping Featherlight openness and simplicity while adding elements like Autofire, Cybertech, and Hacking. Hmm. Well, that's great. And then the six optional character classes that are included are Shunned Nanomancer, Burned Hacker, and Renegade Slasher are some of them that are included. And that's the thing that I liked. They also have an option. If you don't want to theme your character so heavily, you can just play classless in that game. So it doesn't let you advance things because there's not like detailed things to advance, but you can just play, you know, kind of like in Dark Souls, it's just the naked guy with a club, you know. You can
I was thinking like undeclared major at university, but sure.
Yeah, right. Okay. But you can do that to kind of flavor it how you want and not have to be one of these roles, which, you know, pushes your role play one way or another.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, so that we've got in a couple of weeks, we have a Kickstarter showing up for that. And if it's the same level of production that they've done with everything, it should be really fun to see. And I'd the art direction is a big thing I look forward to checking out. So yeah, if they keep the system, a simple D20 system like they have, it should be easy to play. And also, that's going to be a threat, just the same way that I'm hacking the old Warhammer Fantasy for Warlock. You can go back through all the cyberpunk, old cyberpunk and
Shadowrun.
And Shadowrun, and
you'd have to strip out the magic
and put those into a rules light rules light games system. So yeah, so we'll see.
Cool.
See what that looks like. And so there's an early link for so you can subscribe to the getting informed. So I'll put the link to that yet to come Kickstarter in the description.
Ambulance. Cool.
Yeah, nice. Someone is sick and dying. So this last little bit is just a reminder. So I grew up, like, D&D has been a part of my childhood forever, like been really ingrained. So, you know, attracted to like fantasy films and books and stuff just because of that early D&D thing. But as a reminder, D&D has always been stupid. And people have always been trying to make D&D do stupid stuff.
Okay. I want to see where this goes.
I love the game, and I love everything about it, but let's be honest about how silly it is. So somebody just scanned a couple of issues of their old Dragon magazine.
Okay.
Oh, and so Dragon magazine number 41 from April 1981 statted out the immortal deity known as Bugs Bunny.
Yep.
So we finally know, as a playable character, that Bugs Bunny would be a 15th level illusionist.
Okay. I think they also did Daffy Duck. I see.
Popeye. Yeah. There was a.
Well, I haven't seen Popeye yet.
Yeah, there was a lot of silliness in that post. But you know, and I keep seeing that with 5e. People are like, how do you play Wolverine or John Wick or Deadpool in 5e? How to do this? And just like the Dune movie came out, and somebody said, how do you play Dune in 5e? It's like, there is an RPG that you can play Dune.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, I that's not the first time I've heard about Bugs Bunny as D&D. And I forget what version of D&D they made it for. But yeah, seeing that, I kind of go, oh, people have always done this, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've kind of mellowed on this because it can be a decent thought exercise, right?
Right.
Using these available tools, how do I make this thing?
Right,
or how do I make this thing that fits within this system? It's if you want to do that, to figure out how a system works, go for it, right? If you want to do it as kind of like a challenge, do it. Whatever reason you want to do it, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
A do get a little testy when people, when there's like, there is a, another game where you do that, right?
Right?
Are you doing this because you don't have other tools available, because you enjoyed the process, or because you want to learn how something, right? There's any number of valid reasons to do this.
Right.
If you want, I feel, if you want to play a game, you're often going to save yourself a lot of time and effort to just pick up that other game, right? I want to play Dune.
Right.
Great, go pick up the Dune game, right? Yes. Instead of spending all the time and effort to retrofit D&D or any other game to do it. If you're doing it to learn stuff or get something out of it, cool, great, go for it, right?
Yeah, and I guess it would be, it is kind of a test to figure out, like to understand the system understand like, okay, so what do character stats actually mean? If I want to stat out something that's like not even from this universe, how would that look? And I think, I think you're right too. We're seeing a lot of that, and I'm sure Hasbro is loving that.
Oh, sure.
That the familiarity of the rule set is keeping people in, it's like, I know these rules.
Yep.
Yeah, so I don't want to go
and
with
that's fine,
else.
Right? Yeah, like, yeah. I don't want to spend the time learning them. Cool. Great. I kind of wonder, like, the amount of time you're going to spend, in certain cases, right? For me, there comes a point where the amount of time you've spent to do this thing, you could have spent less time learning a new system that probably does what you want to do a little bit better. But if that time you've spent then teaches you to go do something else or helps you better understand, it was not time wasted. Right?
Oh, yeah.
It's only like, I want to play this game. It's less time to learn the new game than it is to retrofit sometimes,
No, that's very true. So the stats, we'll just run over a few of Bugs Bunny's stats. So, of course, chaotic good. Course. He's got 125 hit points, armor class of -4. So that's AD&D. Number of attacks is equal to half the opponent's intelligence score. So that's a lot of attacks.
Unless he's interacting with dumb people.
Yes. Yeah, you'd think they'd be more because, Elmer Fudd, I don't think, has a high intelligence score. His psionic ability is
because he doesn't use magic.
300. And so his stats are 16 strength, 18 intelligence, 16 wisdom, 24 dexterity. I guess that lets him apply makeup and do your hair at that rapid
speed.
Or just
dodge bullets.
Yeah, right. That's right. Constitution 20 and charisma 15, which I thought would be a little bit higher.
Oh, yeah. He can be abrasive.
Yeah. So, that was the stat line for Bugs Bunny. Yeah, so this same article, statted a bunch of kids. And so I think it was called the actual article itself was calling it Saturday Morning Monsters. They wanted to show you how to play. So, I don't know
you're converting them to Warlock when?
Yeah, right. So I'm going to have a Saturday morning cartoon using the Warlock system. So it's just it's a funny thing. And it just reminded me of like the stuff that's going on now when D&D was at its first original height. People were still doing they wanted it. It's like, what about the sci-fi? And so they wanted everything. They wanted it to do everything. And it's just the nature. And I guess once you have some fun sessions with a game, it's like, okay, well, let's change it up a little bit, but not change the rules.
Because we all know the rules. I mean, like, that's valid, right?
Yeah.
Let's see these new people in the same rule set. Mm-hmm.
So even in 81, there was that stupid tendency. So things never change.
Nope.
Yeah. Cause that's a ton of time ago. Is that like 40 years ago? Yeah. Oh. That's insane. All right.
Yeah, you can talk about feeling old. All right.
All right. So, that's it for this week.
Cool.
So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, that's HiveMind, HiveMind, where, like I said, I've kind of fallen off that tabletop-tober hashtag, but maybe I'll try and do something by the end of the month, and I'll probably try and do No Gray November next month to continue painting. Maybe move it over to Instagram because that seems to just be better for pictures.
Oh, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, definitely. I need to get in on that because I've got a lot of unpainted. I've got a
white
lot of
metal.
Gray. Yes, some gray to cover up. Very cool.
Cool.
And I do a single panel gag cartoon that I live stream every week. So if you check out Abuse Cartoons on Twitch and YouTube, you can watch that happening. And if you'd like to support this podcast, this YouTube channel, and basically everything we're doing, take a look at Patreon. So patreon.com/upturntable. and you become a weakling,
yep.
and directly support this show, and let us know kind of what kind of things you'd like to see, what things you don't want to hear about, like Bugs Bunny.
Yeah, or I think more Bugs Bunny. Right?
More Bugs Bunny, yes. Mighty Mouse is coming up next week. Geez,
yeah.
And so everything we do is at upturntable.com and on all social media, so take a look at that. And I think we've got another session of Frostgrave coming
soon,
up. Yeah,
yeah,
soon. So there'll be some more of that, and I'm still working on my little foam shipwrecks and things.
Oh, that's right. The ship one. Yeah, yeah.
So it should be good. But that Lich Lord doesn't stand a chance, right?
I hope. So we'll nine more scenarios and we'll find out.
Yeah, right. Just hope we don't spawn him anytime soon.
Yeah.
All right.
Cool.
So thanks for joining us, and we'll be doing the same thing again next week.
Later, mortals.
Goodbye.